Are you looking for new books to read? Do you like finding a new special author? Are you tired of the same old books from the same old authors? Well then, welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where you can hear from fantastic new authors. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have worked hard to write great new books. Hear about their book and why you should check it out. So sit back and listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Hey, Discovered Wordsmithers. Welcome to another episode. This is a great, fun one. Terry Shepherd and I talked for a while, chatted, just had a good old time. Probably got off topic a few times. We probably could have talked longer, but we decided, hey, maybe we really should record and do some book talk. Terry also has a podcast called Authors on the Air. He has done a whole lot of great interviews with some great folks. So I'll put a link in for everybody to go check that podcast out, see what you think of Terry and the guests. But speaking of podcasts, I have a couple other friends that do a podcast, and I'd like you to hear from them and go check their podcast out. So Christine and JP, take it away.
Hello, we're JP
and Christine,
co-hosts of The Serial Fiction Show. Do you like to read or write serial fiction and want to learn more? We have two podcasts, The Reader Serial Fiction Show and The Writer Serial Fiction Show.
On The Reader's podcast, we escape into a new serial each week, then interview the author to tell us more. On The Writer Serial Fiction Show, we break the serial episode down with the author and talk craft, upping our serial fiction game together. Come get lost in serial fiction and meet some amazing authors along the way to get you reading and writing serial fiction.
So hop on over to serialfictionshow.com and check it out.
We hope to see you there.
All right, so go check their podcast out. It is great fun. They're good people. And now, here's Terry.
Sounds good.
Cool. All right, then we'll get started and we'll just roll. Today, Discovered Wordsmith Podcast, I've got Terry Shepherd with me. Terry, how are you doing today?
Steven, it's great to see you. I love your show. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Long time listener, first time being on it. I listen all the time myself. So
that's how you learn, really, podcasting. I love the fact that being a podcast host, we get to talk to the people we always wanted to, and they'll actually take our...
So before we go into the book part of it, the writing, let's talk about your background. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because off air, we were just talking, and you used to have a different job, but you moved, and you just mentioned podcasting. So it sounds like there's a whole lot that you do. So tell us a little bit about you.
This is actually my sixth reinvention, Steven. I started out thinking I wanted to be a broadcaster and own radio station. So that's what I went to college to do. Paid my way through by being a disc jockey, learned all the chops about how an introvert like me could be an extrovert, realized very quickly that radio wasn't where I was at, got into telecommunications management, did that for much of my career with a five-year entrepreneurial stint in the middle. One of my companies was sold, so I got dot-com rich for a while. And opened up five different companies, a record company, an overseas radio broadcaster network, a aircraft leasing company, a web design company, and a dot-com. So I did that for 5 years, got back in corporate world as a turnaround guy. I decided that the thing that was really my joy was helping people who had lost their mojo find it again. So I did that for a number of years. I did a lot of alumni relations work for about 8 years and then came back to Florida in the spring of 2018, really not knowing what I wanted to do next. And I have a wonderful psychiatrist who says, you've always been worried about making money and taking care of your family. You don't have to worry about that anymore. What would bring you joy? And I always loved writing. I have five nonfiction books out, some self-help books nice. That I wrote under my birth name. And she said, why don't you try fiction? So that's what happened. And I wanted to do the same thing, Stephen, that I had done in my work world, which was I was always a big proponent of opportunity for the disaffected. So I loved it when I could give women and minorities a chance to become leaders, to grow in their careers and have opportunities that prejudice and other things might not make possible. So when I was thinking about what I wanted to write, that's how I came up with Jessica Ramirez. I'm a white guy writing a Latina woman.
Wow. Okay. Now, okay. That's a bold thing to say, a bold choice right there, because if someone's reading that going, wait a minute, I'm reading a white guy, I can see people being offended by that. Why choose that? Who needs a script? Let's just go with this.
I did that very thoughtfully and totally on purpose, Stephen, because you hear a lot of people say that they don't like it when somebody expropriates another culture.
Right.
I looked at it a completely different way. What I wanted to do was I wanted to celebrate differences, and I wanted to celebrate different cultures, different lifestyle choices. And the best way for me to do it as an author is to research it the same way I research cops. And that's to immerse myself in the culture, in the lifestyle, to understand the people. There's no way that any of us can be anybody but who we are. You and I have the same racial background, but I don't know you as the individual you are unless I walk your path with you and ask you the questions and try and understand your story. And that's what I did for each of the main characters. They're based on real people. Jess is based on a very good friend of mine who is a Latina detective, and she experienced a ton of prejudice and really tough times during her 25-year career. Because back then, when she started, it was still very much a misogynistic, male-dominated culture. Unfortunately,
which arguably it still is.
A lot of that still happens today.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to show was Tracy, who's the real-life counterpart for Jess. I wanted to show her resiliency and how she never, ever lost her compassion for humanity and her desire to serve. So that's Jess's strength, and it's her flaw. Jess's sidekick is LGBT. I have a whole world of friends in that space, married couples that my wife and I just love, who are fantastic parents. I wanted to celebrate that too. And then my best friend, his son is on the autism spectrum. So I made my medical examiner on the spectrum to explore what those people think, act, look like. I talked to a number of them. I asked a lot of complicated questions. I was able to decipher that break that there is sometimes on the social side of being able to communicate. And it turns out that Joey Price in book number one of the Jessica Ramirez series gets the most mail. Everybody loves him. Everybody wants to be him. And the greatest feeling that I've ever had is when I get an email from somebody who's on the spectrum and said, until I read that book, I didn't believe that I could be a doctor, that I might be able to be a medical examiner, that I could be a hero. And that's my goal. So I'm a white guy that really wants to understand differences better, to be a better person, to be more inclusive, and to celebrate those things. So hopefully people who read the Vega book and Chasing the Captain will want to grow up to be like the people that star in those books, realizing that they can be heroes too.
Yeah, that's super awesome. And you have some built-in people to read it and give you the feedback and help you and models to model your characters after. So you're not just doing this off the top of your head that, oh, I can, you know, fool people.
Yeah, no, authenticity and accuracy is, I think, really important in every author's journey. Whatever it is you write, you spend a lot of time in that space. And I was very lucky, starting from a young age, to be able to ride along with cops on their jobs and watch them do their thing for a number of years. So I have a ton of friends that are in law enforcement at every level, from street cops to police chiefs to members of the Secret Service, CIA, FBI. So I had all these great technical consultants that would say, nah, your FBI guy wouldn't do that, or this person wouldn't do that. This is a Glock does not have a safety on it. That kind of, I want to get that level of accuracy. So when I write the books, what I do is I actually call the people that are in the location. So the first book takes place largely in Flagstaff, Arizona, in the Grand Canyon. So I got to know the sheriff out there because there is a character who plays the sheriff of Coconino County. I got to know his PR guy. I got to know the rangers that take care of the Grand Canyon because I wanted to understand how they did their job. So the procedural part would be right. But the interesting thing, Stephen, that happens, and maybe you felt this too in your world, is that you get to understand their motivation for why they want to do the job.
Yes.
And everybody has, it's all a little different. You know, there's some cops that get stuck because the money starts to get good and they can't easily switch. And those are the ones that kind of get burned out more quickly. But most of the police officers that I've met, I really have a heart for making the community a better place. And they would much rather not arrest you. They would rather not give you the ticket. But they do want you to understand what the meaning is of whatever it is that you might have done that could either be unsafe or put you in harm's way or hurt somebody else. And that's the kind of police officer I try to celebrate in my books.
Okay. Wow. There we go. That tells us everything we need. It's been great talking to you. So this is a book series that you've done. How many books are in the series?
This is number two, Chasing the Captain, which just came out, is the second book in this series. Just 3.0, if everything goes as planned, will come out on January 1st. I have two more books fleshed out after that. I don't know if I'll write them. It all depends on what I want to do. The thing that's been interesting about this is that the characters lead you down different pathways. For example, in Chasing the Captain, I gave a cameo to one of my friends who has muscular dystrophy and lives life in a wheelchair. I made him the deputy director of MI6. He was only going to have one scene, but it turned out that his character was so powerful that he became a star. So there's all kinds of opportunities for spinoffs. It's just a question of where I want to go.
Right.
I'm at a point in my life, Stephen, where I want to do what's fun. And if I ever get bored with Jess, I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, change personas again.
The thing is that's so fascinating about this is it really isn't the stories that people fall in love with. It's the characters.
I agree. Yeah.
People ask me about, you know, like I have one scene in Chasing Vega where there's a dinner scene and people will say, what else would Jess's family want to eat? So one of the things that we're working on is a Jessica Ramirez cookbook with authentic Mexican cuisine from the people that were part of my research team for this who actually lived that life. I don't know if we're going to get that done. The goal is to try and have it ready for Christmas. I don't know if we'll make that deadline, but that's one thing. Another thing that I want to do is I want to create a police procedural game. I don't know whether it's going to be a video game or a board game or a card game, but I want to teach kids how they can use police procedures to solve mysteries, to solve crimes, and understand actually how it happens. Because one of the goals of the books is to try and inspire more women and minorities to want to become police officers, to want to join law enforcement. I think if we can do that, some of the problems that we're experiencing right now with the minority of people that are bad cops will get better.
I agree. Unfortunately, a lot of this stuff and social commentary, but a lot of this stuff takes some time, but you still have to be working on it. Not an overnight change, but there is change. We've seen it in our life a lot. Maybe it's just my age talking more than when I was an idealistic 20-year-old.
Yeah, that with seasoning comes wisdom, and it's not always happy stuff. There's some sad stuff, but the sad stuff is often the things that become the learning opportunities for you.
But the point we can take away from this is our writing, even fiction writing, has that power to help make that change. Are your books going to suddenly change the world overnight in every way we want? No, but it's part of that puzzle, part of that piece. And the more people that get out there and write about the women and the Latin American community, the LGBT community, or any of these other demographics, whatever color your skin is, if you feel like you're downtrodden, this is what you can do. This is how you let your voice be heard. I'm totally 100% back behind this and love that. And I hope more people get that message.
And the really cool thing is that whoever you are, you can write a great story. It doesn't have to be about downtrodden. It can be just a fantastic story. If you look at some of the great voices today of color, Sean Cosby, his stuff is fantastic. I think he's going to become a literary giant of our generation. Rachel Housel Hall, Ray James. There's so many men and women of color out there that are writing just great, really great fiction, great thrillers, great detective stories that you would, if you closed your eyes and didn't know who they were, you'd want to read them. And I think that's the ultimate goal for all of us as authors, is for people to be able to separate us from our work, and maybe our brand name is associated with one thing, and that's excellence. I
absolutely agree. I'm not 100% correct, and I know this, and I know this isn't the ultimate answer, but the longer we focus on the problem and look at the problem, the longer the problem's going to be there. When we start forgetting and ignoring the problem, and it's just life and people and the stories, then it's more accepted. We've got this new Star Trek series, Discovery, which has a black female captain. And it didn't even faze me. I didn't even think about it because sci-fi and fantasy people, man, we've had women and minorities and every race because we're all from Earth. That's Star Trek. It's all from Earth. Yeah. So it doesn't matter. And that's just been my thought. And it honestly, when I came to the realization, I'm like, huh, not everybody thinks that way. It was an eye opener for me because it just never occurred to me that people didn't think that way. But Star Trek didn't focus on the fact that Sulu was Asian American or just Asian. There was no real American. It was just the background heritage. They didn't focus on it. He just was the best navigator.
Yeah. And that's when you look, Star Trek is a great metaphor because
they
had a lot of firsts. When you think about Nichelle Nichols, first African-American woman in a lead role, first black white kiss was on that show. But go back before that and remember the company that actually put the money behind Star Trek was led by Lucille Ball.
Yep, absolutely.
The groundbreaking in humor, the first really big, a superstar on television that was a woman who built a business empire around it. Desilu Playhouse, Star Trek Untouchables, I think was another one that they did. They didn't hesitate from taking chances. And as a result, that evolution started. So the question is, how can we as authors contribute to that, model that behavior and do this?
Good books write great stories. That's during the pandemic, I had somebody ask me, how can you be focused and concentrating on writing fiction stories when we're in this pandemic? And from a minute, I was like, oh yeah, that's not helping solve a problem. And I'm like, wait a second, it is. People need that escape. They need something different. It's the power of the pen. It's all cliche here today. It really is something that can make a difference in the world. Absolutely.
Well, and you really hit on an important point, Stephen, and that is that we are all right now looking for things to give us hope, looking for things to feel good about, and a great popcorn adventure, which I hope my stories are, is an escape. You could spend 6-7 hours reading that thing back cover to cover, and the good guys are going to win. It's just how they do it. And I think that's the reason that Ted Lasso has done so well on TV. That story is a feel-good thing.
Right.
If it were 3 or 4 years ago, it might not have had the impact that it has right now because it was the right thing in the right place at the right time. And that's, I think, what our dream is as any kind of creators of art, is that our art resonates with a significant enough audience to make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, now I've got this problem with this podcast because is this my book discussion episode or the author talk episode? I'm not really sure. So let me ask, though, you mentioned you also did some kids' books. Tell us about those.
You know, this is how life happens when you don't expect it. I was focused on Jess and on her story and learning how to write in that genre. And one of the things that I do that we're down here now is I go pick up my grandson from school. And one day he says, you can always pick me up from school, Grandpa. Do you have a job? And I said, yeah, I'm an author. I write books. You know that. And he says, would you write one and make Juliet and me the stars? And then the pandemic came. And the questions from them were, what do we do? I'm scared. I don't know what to do to protect myself from this thing. I know people that are dying. What do I do? I decided that I was going to channel the best learning voice that I knew from my childhood, which was Dr. Seuss, and that I would connect with the Centers for Disease Control and ask them, what are the messages that children should know about? And of course, it was masking, hand washing, how to blow your nose, social distancing. And to understand, to be able to explain the science of vaccines in a way that kids could understand. And that's how Juliet and the Mystery Bug came about, the Mystery Bug series. It started out as one book, which was all about a guy, Hudson, gets sick and Juliet wants to understand why, and they learn about cleanliness, about how to wash your hands. And that was, at the time, something we were teaching her. Juliet came to us with Down syndrome. She's enjoying life on the scenic route. She's doing things at her own pace. And we were trying to teach her how to wash her hands. And so that was part of the first Mystery Bug book. I wrote one copy for them. It was illustrated by my son-in-law, who's a fantastic graphic designer and illustrator. And as happens sometimes, the neighbors wanted one. So I made another. And then the teacher wanted one. So I made another. And then before I knew it, I had Book Baby printing hardcovers and Amazon printing soft covers. And now they're all put together in what we call the Mystery Bug, the complete collection, which has all three of the major stories in one volume. And that is being shopped around Washington, D.C. right now. I'm trying to get it in front of Pfizer and Moderna. It's in doctor's offices everywhere.
Nice. And
I never planned it, Stephen. It was never planned, but it was my attempt to try and make knowledge accessible to my grandkids so they wouldn't be afraid, because knowledge is power. And to understand how science works, right? People are always asking, they were saying before we shouldn't be doing this, but now they're saying we can and things are changing. Why is that? That's because we learn from science. Things change if you get more knowledge. What we thought we might back in the old days,
the stuff you put in cough syrup,
you wouldn't put in your cough syrup. Right. Now.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was the goal, to try to create something that would actually make it easier for kids. And the only complaint I get from parents is that, like Dr. Seuss, the kids fall in love with the poetry and they want to hear it again. And so the parents will say to me, I love the book. My kids understand everything. We've made our homemade masks now. But can you please write something else so I don't have to read that one to them again?
Well, that's a really rough problem for you there. Could you write something else for us to get from you?
Yeah, that is the curse of success, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
The thing that I hear from authors is that they only have the capacity to write so much. And like Don Winslow, for example, writes one a year. And I was at a conference in London and I was sitting in the front row to watch him speak. And there were a bunch of ladies sitting with me. And I'm thinking, wow, okay, female authors. I'm writing a female protagonist. So I ask them what they wrote. And they said, oh, we don't write. We're here because we want to see Don Winslow.
Wow.
And he doesn't give us enough. So what do you write? Do you write in his genre?
Put their hand on your leg or something?
Yeah.
You need to get a shirt that something like author and grandpa, or when I'm not creating worlds, I'm with my grandchildren, something. You need a really good shirt for that.
You know what happens too? The whole world becomes you record everything. My wife can't stand going to the restaurant with me because I'll get locked into some dialogue that's going next in the table next to me. And she says, you're taking notes for Jess, aren't you?
All the time.
You do it too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And in fact, my wife gave me a character idea the other day and I'm like, okay, I got to find somewhere. I write fantasy. So most of my characters get changed. They're not real world type people.
That's what I love about fantasy. It's transformational. You get to go beyond what you think your limitations are and literally transform into a different world, a different place, different culture, a different character. I think that's the popularity of Avatar, right? Same thing. And we like that. It's a fascinating genre. And I'm so glad you're writing it. There's not enough good stuff coming out in that space right now.
And I write middle grade. So I'm targeting the middle school kids because
perfect. Yeah.
I think kids love to read when they get good stuff. This is an argument. Not every kid may like Harper Lee, if that's crazy enough. Not every kid may like Jane Austen, but they're like, this is what you're reading too bad. And then they're like, well, I hate reading. Why do you hate reading? Because you're not reading anything you enjoy.
That's the secret of the Twilight Zone, right? When you think about what Rod Serling was doing back in the 60s.
Yeah.
He was talking about really heavy duty cultural issues that we did not want to talk about, but you're wrapping around fantasy and science fiction. The Harper Lee stuff, put that in a graphic novel and it'll sell.
Well, The Odyssey, the Iliad. I know several kids that read that whole thing in graphic novel. And I'm like, have you ever checked out the real book? They're like, no, I love this.
Yeah, okay. But they will. When the time's right, they will. I mean, that was the advice that I'm sure you're getting this advice too, is if you write in two genres like I do, you have to be very careful about what you're saying in your older book because kids will go look for them. And and you want to make sure that your audience can grow into what you wrote next. I remember reading C.S. Lewis, Chronicles of Narnia, when I was a kid. And then when I got older, I picked up Screwtape Letters and Philandria and some of that other stuff that he wrote in sci-fi. And I didn't get it. Gave me Aslan. I felt betrayed. But when I got older, I understood it. And I really liked it.
Which is a argument of why use different pseudonyms, author names.
Yep.
I was at this conference over the weekend. And I know everybody says, oh, readers want the same thing. So don't write different. And that never clicked with me because I'm like, I read so much and all over the place. And I feel like writing this. I feel like writing that. But the way it was like changed to explain to me was it's a brand and a product. So when people feel like a cop popcorn drama, they're going to think Jess and pick that up. So when the new book comes out, that's what they want. It's not that they don't want to read horror or sci-fi, but when they pick up that bag of popcorn that says Jess wrote this, they want the certain brand in there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that makes so much more sense to me now. And so I get it a lot better now. Yeah.
But people, I could tell you a lot of authors that I know and some that you would see on the New York Times bestseller list do have secondary pseudonyms.
Yeah.
One of the things I also do is I narrate books of my broadcast background. And a lot of my colleagues will have two different or three different narrator pen names, depending upon the genre. If they're reading thrillers, they're reading it as one person. If they're reading, love stories, it's another. And their fans who like both will say, wait a minute, Andy, aren't you the same one I heard on this thing? And she goes, they don't hide it. A great example. I don't know if you read Carrie Schaefer or Carrie Ann Clark, but they are the same person. They just write in two different genres. Very good in both spaces. But what happens is the audience knows, okay, this Carrie is writing about this.
Yes. I
like this stuff. But if they want to take it, you get it because she's so open about it. She's getting some spillover. And that's right. The ultimate cool thing when you can introduce somebody to a genre
right.
that they didn't know about before.
And that's exactly what this other author said is you don't have to hide these different author names. You can put them all on the same website. In fact, they recommended you do that. Tell the people, look, if you like sci-fi, read this author. If you like fantasy, read this author. You like crime dramas, read this other author. It's all me, but this is the product you're buying off the shelf this time. And then they might go. But if they think they're getting fantasy, but they get the cop drama, then they get a sour taste. That's not what I bought. And it turns them off. So I'm like, okay, now it makes sense to me. I get it.
Well, here's the thing that I learned about writing is that genres wrap around the mechanics, right? And every good story has some of the same things in common. Your other guests have said this much better than I will, but there always has to be something in every chapter where you learn something about the character, where there is some hand grenade that's thrown at their comfortable unreality or wherever they happen to be, where things get worse and there needs to be either character growth or a cliffhanger at the end that makes you want to turn to the next page. So whatever the genre is, now that I'm into this and I do this as a journeyman, I can read any genre, but I'm always looking for, okay, yep, there, we've learned something about the character there. There's the growth. Okay, they revealed the flaw. There's the flaw. Red herring. I see the red herring. Oh, and here comes the hand grenade. And that's what is really cool. I think as a reader, you don't know that stuff, but you do know. You love the creativity of how you box people into the corner and how they have to figure their way back out.
What you feel about it. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I don't think we mentioned, where do you reside, because you have that wonderful background from the 15th floor.
We live in Jacksonville, Florida. It's not the place I would have necessarily chosen. I was born and raised in Michigan. And so I love the forest. I love being outside. My ideal place to live would be, we lived in a lot of places because I was, as a corporate guy, we moved everywhere. And our favorite place we lived was Albuquerque, New Mexico, Colorado, probably Denver would be where I would want to land. But we are where the kids are, and our kids are 10 minutes from us. We're able to help them. We're in the golden years with our grandchildren, and we wouldn't be anywhere else. So Jacksonville, Florida it is for
now.
There
you go. Nice. Yeah, I agree. Albuquerque's gorgeous, beautiful. Even with the weather, I would maybe live in Maine. Just, it's a beautiful state.
Oh, yeah. Maine's beautiful.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, and that's the other thing is, you know, when I get the hankering for some place, I'll put it in a story so I can go up there and do research.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. Well, maybe I need to write a story. Maybe I need to do like Piers Anthony did and do a fantasy set in like Florida. Put Xanth in Florida.
Really. You could do that. You could do that. This is the other thing is that you always got to have an ear to your audience. And I don't know how this happened. And one of the things that Seth Godin told me was if you start promoting a year before you actually do something. I didn't have that much time. But one of the first things I did when I created Jessica was I gave her a Twitter handle. So she is on Twitter as DET Jess Ramirez. And she's got thousands of fans.
Nice.
People that love her. She posts, her personality is such, so she's always posting the today in bad judgment. So she'll show those mini videos of people slipping and falling because they're doing something stupid. Or there's one of her series is the do-it-yourself vasectomy clinic, where men that are trying to be macho slip and fall onto the fence or something like that.
Right.
For some reason, and I still can't figure this out, they love her in Great Britain. And that's why Captain, 2/3 of the story is in London, because her cop friends over there keep asking her, we want to see you. We don't want to see Shepard. We want to see you. And why don't you put us in your story? We want to work beside you in London or in the UK. So we did that with the second book. She picks up a temporary partner with the Met in London, who is of a mixed race, South African Zulu and Scottish father. Zulu mom.
Wow, and that's an interesting combo. I like that.
Oh my gosh, she has a Scottish accent, but she's grew up in Johannesburg. So in one of the worst cities of the, I did not go to Johannesburg to research. I have a very good friend who's an author who told me everything I wanted to know about South Africa. But that was, you know, totally audience driven. So the balance of really trying to listen to what your readers want and to be able to give it to them in a way that's fun and exciting. There actually is a Jessica Ramirez tour in London. All the places that she goes to there are real places. The London Eye, that big Ferris wheel. There's a scene there. Belmarsh Prison. She visits somebody in Belmarsh. There are two pubs that she goes to, one in the Strand and one, I'm trying to remember where, Rotherhithe, I think, is where the other one is. But they're real places. You can go in there and order what she ordered off the menu. And there's actually a guy who I know who will take you there if you want to see all these places. So that's part of it, too, is you're thinking about the character. If you want, when I used to go to Oxford in the summertime, I always went to the place which doubled for the Harry Potter, where they did all of their meetings and stuff, because I wanted to understand how J.K. got that idea in her mind. And that's part of, I think, what really is important if you're going to write is you got to be able to immerse yourself in the research. You have to have experienced some of these things on your own or know somebody who has had the visceral experiences to be able to tell the tale.
And a couple like little lessons just in everything you were just saying that, first of all, we do live in a much smaller world. So it's not just the country you live in. There's so many countries and so many people want some of these books. You probably would have never, if you hadn't paid attention, you might have missed that you have a whole contingent of people in Great Britain that love your stories. And that's not what you might think. Plus, you listen to them. So you want to talk about writing the market. There you go. You get feedback and this is what I'm doing now. So there you go. Boom.
Well, I do hear from people in the States that say, when are you going to write a story where Jess actually works in her home jurisdiction? Because she'll be there briefly. We get just a taste of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So one of the books that I am working on is a biography, an autobiography that Jess tells in her own voice of her actual experience becoming a cop. And that's totally based on Tracy. So everything Tracy has told me about her entire path from being a probie to becoming a detective and ultimately detective lieutenant, I'm going to tell those stories there primarily because a lot of those did not have happy. If you were a minority or a female
in real life.
Yeah. And part of what the thing that initially pointed me in the direction of writing this is that I could take some of those stories. And there is one in Vega that's an actual thing that happened to Tracy that I took all the way up to the point where the bad ending happened. And then I had her become victorious. And that turned out to be, I get a lot of email about that scenario because they love the way it ended. They love the way that her boss, the cop who was her boss, who's not a really good cop, got his comeuppance. They think that's great. And that's part of what we're looking for, I think. And it's part of the formula. If you're baking the cake, you got to bake some of that in there.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Now, what's your friend think of being the inspiration for this character?
She thinks that Jessica has too much emotion. And Jessica, when you read the story, Jessica is a very compartmentalized cop. She is very much like Tracy in that she is purpose and value driven. And some of the decisions that Jessica makes that are bad decisions because she allows her heart to overtake her mind. And that's one thing Tracy would never do. Tracy is very good at compartmentalization. She assesses everything ice cold. And I sometimes wonder, I tell her, I say, you need to cry sometimes. And she says, you don't cry when you're a cop. You don't do that. They do. Because I've been with them when they have.
I could not do that job.
Yep. That's what keeps them alive. They got to be able to express those emotions someplace. But Tracy's found this way to be able to do it, compartmentalize in a healthy way. So she thinks Jess is too soft sometimes. But I told her, nobody's going to like Jess if she's a hard ass like you are all the time. She's got to have a heart too.
How tall is your friend?
Same size, 5'7".
Yep. So not over tall, but not super short.
Yeah. So I mean, she's very feminine. I mean, she can dress up to look like she isn't a cop. She can make herself whatever. I think that's probably from her years of being undercover. She can do all these different characters herself. But I've seen her giving speeches and stuff to the minority community and in public as an advocate for seniors, because that's one of the things she feels very powerfully about as senior citizen. And she could look like she would never, you'd never think she was a cop. But inside that brain, it's interesting when you drive with her, because she'll, even when we're not, when she wasn't on duty, we'd be driving around. She said, there's drugs in that car. she'd say, that's exactly where they are. See that hubcap? They're in there.
Wow.
And I'd say, okay, let's stop them and see. I want to see them.
I need to write this down. You know, tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me. Wait. So guy leaning up against the hood right now, what are you thinking? How's this affecting you?
Well, yeah. But police are trained to smell that stuff out. And
it's a habit then.
It's part of the art, right? It's when you think about the best musicians that can really just build these, they have this sixth sense for how music and lyrics go together, the construction of symphonic type pieces. When I think about my favorite Beatles album, Abbey Road, you can let that thing track from one side to the other. Earth, Wind, and Fire, I Am, another one, you can do that.
That's a good
Dark
one.
Side of the Moon, right? Those guys, that's part of who they are. And in the cop world, some of the greatest, they sniff that out, but they also have the gift of being a psychologist and a social worker. They don't want to arrest you. And even if they don't forget your humanity. Now, what we see on TV is the 1% that are not, that shouldn't be in uniform. And sadly, just like the many minority communities, their pictures are painted across a broader spectrum by the activities of a few. So part of what I try and do in Jessica's stories is to portray cops as they really are, their humanity, their professionalism, and their dedication, the true dedication, the heart they bring to their craft. And that's been the most rewarding thing for me, is to, when I hear from my fellow people, that the friends that are in law enforcement, that I got it right, or even when they tell me I got it wrong, they're gentle about it. I know that they're paying attention, and I know that they ultimately feel that what I'm doing is going to shine a better light on them, a light on their profession.
And I love that. So I usually ask, would you rather have this as a movie or a TV show? But I'm going to guess this would make a better TV show. And what you just said, focusing on her as a person, and the cop is almost secondary. What we were saying earlier about, don't focus on the problems, focus on just the character and stuff and get past the problems. This would be the perfect vehicle for that. A cop TV show that's more focused on this Latino woman that's a mother, a friend, that's living her life. She just happens to put on a uniform every now and then and bust a bad guy.
And that's the interesting thing, is that there are so many commonalities we share. If you spend any time in a typical, and it's what I'm doing is I'm reducing it to a stereotype, but a typical Latino home, very likely to be Catholic, very spiritual, very family oriented. Traditions are important. Meals are a family That's where a lot of this stuff gets discussed. In some traditional Hispanic households, the man is still, it's like watching My Big Fat Greek Wedding. The man is the head, but the woman is the neck. And the man controls the head. That's a great line. The Kazan has in that film. But that's what I try and do is I try and plug in enough of those commonalities that people would remember from their own experiences. So they'd say, yeah, I might not be my family, but I had an uncle and his family was exactly like, we all have those. We all express our traditions and the things that are important to us about life in the same way. And that's why you see a lot of these reboots. You can overlay the same storylines. A great Stanley Kubrick thing. Every shot has been shot. Every story has been told. Judy Collins said every song has been written. Our responsibility as authors is to rewrite those in our own voice for a new audience so it resonates with them. And maybe Harper Lee doesn't, but that story should. So at some point, somebody ought to write that. Maybe you, Stephen, write it as a fantasy. How would you write Harper Lee as a fantasy?
Wow, that put me on the spot on that one.
Yeah, I mean, but think about it. It's the Star Trek pilot, right? There is some Harper Lee in that story, right?
Yeah, and you're right. What do they say? There's 36, depending on where you get the info, there's 36 plots.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
just reuse them.
Have your own fun with it. It's great. Right.
So, writing these books, who are some of your favorite authors in books?
Wow. See, this is the thing. When I started out, I had a set. But now that I'm in it, I have it. My faves have expanded. I came in when I started this, I made a list of my top four favorite authors. And I wrote to each of them. I wrote them a fan letter. I said, I'm going to be turning 65. I think I want to write for a living. I'm not a fan. I'm not a stalker. But would you tell me one thing, piece of advice, that you would give somebody starting off writing? And to a person, these are people like Dan Brown, James Patterson, Megan Abbott, Allison Liotta. They all responded with long, helpful emails. Patterson gave me an outline to one of his books. He says, I'm not a pantser, I'm an outliner. Here's an outline. They were all incredibly helpful. And then the other thing that I found that I really love, and maybe this is the secret thing too, is that our community is so inclusive. We share the love for the genre and we share the love for the craft. And there is so much demand out there and never enough content. It's like a bag of potato chips, one bag of potato chips in a football stadium. There's no way you can satisfy everybody with one person. So there's not really competition between us. So we all help each other. And that's where guys like Lee Goldberg came in. Lee Goldberg is a guy who has written television scripts, Spencer for Hire, Monk. He's been involved with those two hit shows. He writes his style of plotting and storytelling is what I try to copy. It's fast, it's popcorn, and it's cinematic. You can see the shots and the scenes and stuff happen that way. But I'm also really fascinated by the depth that a Megan Abbott brings. When her show, I think it was Dare Me, that was made into a series. She got to be a showrunner for that. She was telling me what that was like. Talk about jumping outside your comfort zone. And then guys that are in other mediums, I'm a big Geoff Johns fan. Geoff Johns, people that don't know, is the king of comic books.
Yeah, and my son loves him.
We became buddies because he and I went to the same university. And he is the nicest guy you would ever meet. And so he brought Aquaman back. He became friends with Richard Donner and basically drove the DC universe for a long time and did some amazing things with. I look to him and I look at the way that he tells stories visually. And I try and imagine, especially when I get stuck, I try and imagine what would happen if I was writing this as a screenplay or as a graphic novel in Geoff Johns' kind of style. And that's where the blockage opens up and things start to happen.
Wow. Okay.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.